historicengland.org.uk/disability history.
For historical accuracy, this research has used language in the context of the time period being explored. Words used to describe different types of disability at different times can sound offensive to modern ears. During this recording, we'll explain the definitions of these words as used at the time.
Disability in the 19th century. This section describes the rapid expansion of new institutions in the 19th century when many people with disabilities were moved from their communities into asylums and workhouses. The growth of asylums. The 19th century is the time when buildings designed for disabled people boomed. The Industrial Revolution had a dramatic impact on the English landscape. Towns, factories, railways, and mills quickly replaced the ancient fields and villages. Outside many towns and cities, the high walls and chimneys of a new county pauper lunatic asylum began to dominate the view. From any of the great main lines of railway which run through the shire, proclaimed the Builder magazine in 1892, a traveller will be sure to spy, in some comparatively secluded position, a great group of buildings, which by their modern air, their tall chimney stacks and their bulky water tower, seem to belong rather to the busy towns than to country seclusion. This was the asylum. The asylum was something distant to marvel at, but not somewhere many 19th century people would ever want to live. New workhouses. Following the 1834 Poor Law Act, 350 grim new workhouses were built, one within roughly every 20 miles. Earlier workhouses had housed the destitute disabled of the local parish, and their buildings were of a more humane design. The new workhouses were designed to root out shirkers and scroungers. They were intended as miserable places to live, with Spartan conditions and harsh work regimes. The able-bodied poor avoided them if they could, so disabled and mentally ill people were moved into them.
Poor law. Legislation designed to define English society's obligations and duties to the destitute, aged, sick or disabled, judged unable to look after themselves. Also contained punitive measures aimed at able-bodied poor people deemed idle or unwilling to work. Began with a 1531 law under Henry VIII and culminated in the Poor Law Amendment Act of 1834. Workhouse, an institution to house and put to work the destitute poor. Many destitute sick, aged and disabled people also lived in them. After the 1834 Poor Law Amendment Act, deliberately designed as punitive institutions to discourage people from idleness.
Attitudes hardened. At the beginning of the 19th century, a few hundred people were living in 9 small charitable asylums. By 1900, more than 100,000 idiots and lunatics were in 120 county pauper asylums. A further 10,000 were in workhouses. This happened largely because society now thought that giving financial relief to people in their own homes would encourage laziness. The truly destitute would be helped, but only in the workhouse, where no one would want to stay for long. Society did not understand the impact this would have on disabled and mentally ill people.
Idiots. When classification systems were introduced in the 19th century, idiot was used to denote the lowest rank of intelligence and functional ability, similar to what we would define as a profound learning disability today. In earlier English use to describe dull-witted people, who could be seen as broadly equivalent to what we would define as having a learning disability, but could be used in a wider sense to describe the laboring classes and the peasantry. Today used pejoratively or abusively. Lunatics. Early term to describe broadly the term mentally ill used today. Current usage is pejorative or abusive.
Alienists and asylums. There was a new class of medical professional, the alienist, later known as a psychiatrist. At first, alienists believed asylums were peaceful places where patients could be restored by moral treatment. But by the end of the century, they had lost their therapeutic optimism and believed that most patients were incurable. The asylums contained chronic and dangerous cases, and most of the inmates never left.
Moral treatment. A method of treatment for people living in madhouses or lunatic asylums, which rejected physical restraint and harsh treatment in favor of gentle discipline, order, and therapeutic intervention. Pioneered by the Quaker York Retreat and taken up in some public asylums, in particular by John Connolly at Hanwell Asylum in the 19th century. Incurable. Term used to describe mentally ill or learning disabled people whose condition is perceived to be permanent and who are therefore unable to recover. Chronic. A 19th century term for a person with mental illness who is perceived as unlikely to recover from their illness.
Life as a disabled person in Victorian England. Despite the expansion of institutions, people with disabilities still lived in their communities. Special schools and many charitable organizations for disabled people were established. Though some people begged on the streets, others prospered. The blind Henry Fawcett, 1833-1884, became Postmaster General in 1880. Young disabled people formed a self-help group called the Guild of the Brave Poor Things. Their coat of arms was a sword crossed with a crutch. The growth of the asylum, a parallel world. This section describes the rapid development of the asylum movement in the 19th century and the strange parallel world that the asylum offered its inmates and attendants. The asylum, a safe place. The asylum age arrived suddenly in the 19th century. Until then, it had been accepted in English society that people with disabilities or illness who needed care and support got it from family, friends, and community. Now reformers claimed that an asylum would be a safe place where lunatics could be cured and idiots taught.
Asylum. Form of institution particularly for mentally ill or learning disabled people, which creates a fully segregated environment set apart from mainstream society. Began as charitable institutions in England in the late 18th century, built and provided by the state from 1815.
An asylum in every county. Beginning with 9 voluntary institutions, the asylum movement rolled across the 19th century English landscape like an avalanche gathering pace. The mentally unsound were moved in ever greater numbers from their communities to these institutions. From 1808, Parliament authorized publicly funded asylums for pauper lunatics, and 20 were built. From 1845, it became compulsory for counties to build asylums, and a lunacy commission was set up to monitor them. By the end of the century, there were as many as 120 new asylums in England and Wales, housing more than 100,000 people.
Lunacy Commission. A public body established by the Lunacy Act of 1845 to oversee the welfare of people with mental illness, lunatics, and people with learning disabilities, idiots. One of their roles was to monitor and inspect asylums.
The three types of asylum. There were three main types of asylum built. The conglomerate, a hodgepodge of miscellaneous structures. Suffolk County Asylum. The corridor type, with wards connected by corridors up to a quarter of a mile long. Coney Hatch Lunatic Asylum in Middlesex. And later the pavilion type, where rows of female and male blocks each housed 150 to 200 patients. Leeds Den Hospital, Abbots Langley, Hertfordshire. Building styles ranged from classical Greek to Gothic.
More information about Suffolk County Asylum at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.aspx?UID=B49D387-CFD5-4684-B74841B. Ampersand resource ID equals 19191. More information about Coney Hatch Lunatic Asylum at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list-entry/107848. More information about Leeds Den Hospital at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.aspx?UID=9B3132A6FF7A07481B. A8-74C0-4735-9902-B62C97AAF0B4. Ampersand resource ID equals 19191.
Inside the asylum. Entering through the large gates past the porter in his lodge, the visitor's eye would be caught by the looming water tower at the center of the grounds and the chapel. Clustered around the tower were the kitchens, laundries, workshops, recreation hall and administration block. On either side were the wards, with the sexes rigorously separated. Each ward housed up to 100 people. As many as 50 patients slept in one dormitory with their beds close together. During the day they also made use of rooms for relaxation and ate in large communal dining halls. Male and female attendants were as strictly segregated as their patients and they worked and lived out their lives on the site, often for generations.
Attendants. A 19th and early 20th century term for staff working with patients in asylums and workhouses.
A self-contained world. In their rural settings and surrounded by high walls to prevent escapes, asylums were a self-contained world. The grounds were designed by some of the finest landscape gardeners. They contained farms, orchards, workshops, bowling greens, croquet lawns and cricket pitches. Leading off the wards were airing courts, walled gardens with shelters where patients could safely exercise. Some asylums even had their own railway stations with a branch line into the grounds. The five asylums known as the Epsom Cluster in Surrey had their own light railway and rolling stock. There would often be an asylum fire brigade with its own fire engine. And there was always a cemetery. Highroyd's Asylum Cemetery, West Yorkshire, is now a memorial garden.
More information about Highroyd's Asylum Cemetery at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list-entry/1240191.
A place of confinement and a loss of hope. As the asylums multiplied, the number of people certified as insane soared. More and more people arrived, and fewer ever left. In 1806, the average asylum housed 115 patients, and by 1900, the average was over 1,000. Early optimism that people could be cured had vanished. The asylum became simply a place of confinement. New wings and stories were constantly added until eventually a second, or even third county asylum had to be built in many areas. In London there were 11 by this time. Different times, divergent views. In 1866 the physician Sir George Paget, 1809-1892, hailed the asylum as the most blessed manifestation of true civilization the world can present. Then, 130 years later on, one historian described them as museums for the collection of the unwanted. The strange parallel world of the asylum always stirred up strong emotions, as it continues to do so today. Daily life in the asylum. This section describes the rigorous organization and control of daily life at the asylum and how its inmates lived and worked, exercised and celebrated, reflecting the life that continued outside the asylum walls. Fresh air and exercise. One day in 1854, most of the 298 lunatic and idiot patients of the Norfolk County Asylum assembled in the grounds. It was time for drill. Responding to barked commands from nursing staff, they marched around the 30 acres surrounding the asylum. Great control is gained over the patients, commented a lunacy commission inspector, and the task of taking a vast number for air and exercise becomes comparatively easy.
More information about Norfolk County Asylum at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list-entry/137-2707.
The daily routine. The asylum day was long, rigorously organized and highly controlled. At the Liverpool Lunatic Asylum, Merseyside, the bedroom doors of patients were unlocked at 6 o'clock a.m. Patients were washed, their hair brushed and the state of their skin examined. At 9 o'clock a.m., following breakfast, they were taken to the airing courts and gardens, while the wards were cleaned. Bedtime was at 8 o'clock p.m., and patients slept in long rows of beds that were 2 feet and 6 inches apart.
More information about Liverpool Lunatic Asylum at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x?mark)UID=277F125-FD67-4E00-B37F-E9836827F98. A& resource ID=19191.
Growing food, generating income. At the Buckinghamshire County Asylum near Aylesbury, the focus was on work, preferably out of doors. For the men it was gardening and husbandry, for the women occupations suited to their ability, such as light hoeing and sorting potatoes. At the First Middlesex Asylum in Hanwell, also known as the Hanwell Insane Asylum, London, patients were encouraged to aid their recovery by keeping small allotments. On the nearby canal, produce from the asylum gardens was loaded onto barges at the asylum dock and shipped to the London markets to generate income. An asylum diet was better than in many working households, with fish or meat and vegetables for lunch, and bread and cheese supplemented by beer, cocoa and tea.
More information about Buckinghamshire County Asylum at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x)mark(UID=672245E-5B07-4870-8962-30B905C6A05C& resource ID=19191. More information about Middlesex Asylum at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x)mark(UID=E49EE3FD-D6E05-4E68-83F9-07AF2FB6A64D-7. Resource ID=19191.
The opening of Coney Hatch. In 1851, the year of the Great Exhibition, Prince Albert, 1819-1861, opened the second Middlesex County Pauper Lunatic Asylum in Coney Hatch, north of London. With its Italian style, 6 miles of corridors and capacity for 1,000 people, it was a model of modern asylum design. It had its own gasworks, brewery, farm and even an aviary breeding canaries. Its catchment area was North and East London.
More information about Middlesex County Pauper Lunatic Asylum at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list-entry/107-8848.
A bustling, isolated community. Within 15 years, 2,000 people were living there, including many from the large, impoverished Jewish community in London's East End. A kosher kitchen was installed and a Jewish cook employed. An interpreting attendant was recruited for the many Yiddish speakers. Craft workshops were managed by local artisans. As well as this, patients' boots and clothing and staff uniforms were made on site in tailoring workshops. There were also bookbinding, carpentry and mat-making activities. As many as 150 women were worked in the laundry. We also know that patients kept canaries as pets, and cats roamed the estate hunting vermin. Within 50 years, Coney Hatch had effectively become a small, overcrowded, enclosed town with all the bustle and drama of the multicultural London streets that its patients had once left behind. The rhythm of life. Life had its own daily and seasonal rhythms. At the Buckinghamshire County Asylum, the chaplain would perform the Church of England service every Sunday, Christmas Day and Easter. There were Christmas parties and patient dances. Institutions even marked their own histories. The Sussex Asylum celebrated its fourth anniversary with a grand ball in 1863. Momentous national events were also celebrated, such as the coronation of George V, 1865-1936, Queen Victoria's grandson, took place on the 22nd of June 1911. At the Western Counties Idiot Asylum at Starcross, near Exeter in Devon, the day began with the inmates performing a Trooping the Colour spectacle. After a day of celebration, as night drew in, the buildings of the asylum were illuminated and a flag drill was performed, accompanied by the fifes and drums of the Asylum Boys Band. The First World War was just 3 years away.
More information about Western Counties Idiot Asylum at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x?mark)uid=10F8-2D9-5-98D-45-7B-9FF6-E3C2B2F(CD17F) ampersand resource ID=11991.
The changing face of the workhouse, asylums in everything but. This section describes the workhouses built after the 1834 Poor Law Amendment Act, designed to punish the work-shy with their harsh regime, but which increasingly housed the mentally ill and the disabled. Early workhouses. The workhouse at the dawn of the 19th century was a very different place to the later institution that would come to occupy such a strong place in popular memory. Although shunned and dreaded by many, it was a gateway to various means of support for the disabled and destitute. The early workhouse was seen as an all-purpose parish institution. It combined an emergency ward, orphanage, geriatric ward, and home of last resort. Used for parish business and meetings, it also housed the parish fire engine and morgue. Most had a shell, a form of stretcher, to collect accident victims and dispensaries to treat disabled and sick residents. Living arrangements were very simple but relatively informal, with disabled and non-disabled people living together. The workhouse could be built on a domestic scale, like the parish workhouse in Aldenham, Hertfordshire, or with considerable style like Gresson Hall in Norfolk and the Harrogate Workhouse, the so-called pauper palaces.
More information about Harrogate Workhouse at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list-entry/118928.
A punitive law. The nature of the workhouse changed suddenly and rapidly with the introduction of the Poor Law Amendment Act in 1834. From now on, the idle able-bodied would be made to work in the workhouse. The new system would be deliberately harsh with minimum comfort. For example, chairs were to be made without backs to make sitting uncomfortable. People were given a basic diet and men and women were strictly separated. As well as this, husbands and wives would live apart, as would parents and children. The idea was to punish the work-shy so that only the truly destitute or incapable would ask for help. The new workhouses. The architects George Gilbert Scott, 1811-1878, and William Moffat, 1812-1887, crisscrossed the country on horseback in the 1840s, picking up workhouse commissions. Their designs, based on standard model plans, excluded any extravagance when compared to their other designs for hospitals and offices. The workhouses were sited on the edges of towns to avoid offending the citizens and built to a standard below the average labourer's cottage, so as not to be too attractive to the poor. In the 5 years after the Act, some 350 new workhouses were built at a distance of roughly 20 miles from each other, with a further 200 constructed before the end of the century. The inmates. The able-bodied poor avoided the new workhouses, so many were soon housing the old, the sick, the mentally ill, and those with physical or learning disabilities who could not work. In 1835, the Birmingham Workhouse built wards specifically for insane residents. The Leicester Workhouse segregated idiots and lunatics, providing specialized nursing attendance. By 1837, more than 8,000 idiots and lunatics were under the care of parishes. Workhouse staff struggled to care for them. In 1854, the master of the Southwell Workhouse, Nottinghamshire, complained about a suicidal lunatic resident. The only way they could control the poor creature, he claimed, was to beat him around the toes and head with a stick.
More information about Birmingham Workhouse at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x?UID=2CC4B-FBA-069B-46EF-89B5-C49C32-2B74A1). Resource ID equals 19191. More information about Leicester Workhouse at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.aspx?UID=412 6DA5E-F04B-43A4-8823-93CC3E3DF FB0 Resource ID equals 19191. More information about Southwell Workhouse at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.aspx?UID=880EC670-D926-472F-A0B-E-8811713F2 Resource ID equals 19191.
A harsh regime. The meager workhouse diet consisted of gruel, bread and cheese, with soup or meat and potatoes once a week. Water was the only drink, tea was a privilege for the elderly, and work was punishing. Women made sacks or worked in the kitchen and laundry while men chopped wood or ground corn. In 1856, the Lunacy Commission commented that the huge insane wards in some workhouses were asylums in everything but the attendants and appliances which ensure sick, proper treatment. But asylums were intended only for those who could be cured or who were disruptive. This excluded harmless and incurable idiots, 10,000 of whom remained in the workhouses. Later on, the workhouses were renamed public assistance institutions and dwindled, but the last few lingered until 1948. The daily life of disabled people in Victorian England, community, school and charity. This section describes the increase in educational and charitable provision for disabled people who lived in their communities. It explains how some prospered while others continued to fight for survival and respect. Victorian attitudes to disability. In 1848, a religious advice pamphlet observed, "Some boys laugh at poor cripples when they see them in the street. Sometimes we meet a man with only one eye, or one arm, or one leg, or who has a humpback. How ought we to feel when we see them? We ought to pity them." The writer had a sting in the tail for the jeering boys. While cripples might be made bright and beautiful by God on Judgment Day, wicked able-bodied children who laughed at them could be burned in a fire that will never be put out. These were the ambivalent Victorian attitudes towards disability, a combination of fear, pity, discomfort, and an idea of divine judgment.
Cripples, a term used to describe physically disabled people, until the second half of the 20th century. Cripple is its early English form, used in the medieval period. Now used pejoratively or abusively.
Living in the community. The pull of the asylum and the workhouse was strong, but many thousands of people with disabilities stayed in their communities. The social investigator Henry Mayhew, 1812-1887, described the disabled beggars of the London streets in 1862, including the idiotic-looking youth, shaking in every limb, and the crab-like man without legs strapped to a board, who walks upon his hands. Some disabled people prospered. James Deaf Burke, 1809-1845, also known as the Deaf Un, rose from poverty to become a world champion prize fighter. Henry Fawcett, 1833-1884, blinded as a young man, became Postmaster General in 1880. He introduced the parcel post and the postal order. Education specializes. Educational provision for children and young people with disabilities grew rapidly. Literacy and education became as important as traditional vocational training. In 1838, the London Society for Teaching the Blind to Read was formed, and in 1866, the Worcester College for the Blind, for the Blind Sons of Gentlemen, became the world's first further education provision for disabled people. In the 1890s, local authorities were empowered to set up day schools for blind, deaf, defective, and epileptic children. By 1899, there were 43 such schools in London alone, teaching 2,000 children. Life in the asylum was not the inevitable route for everyone.
Defective. Term used in the early 20th century to describe a person who would be described today as having a learning disability.
Charitable services. The Victorian era also saw a huge explosion in charitable activity. By the end of the century, there were hundreds of organizations providing community or institutional services to disabled people. There were charitable bodies for the blind, the deaf and dumb, lunatics, idiots, epileptics, and the deformed. They offered education, association for the oral instruction of the dumb, work, Liverpool workshops and home teaching society for the blind, hospital treatment, National Hospital for the Paralyzed and Epileptic, and many other services. In 1868, the British and Foreign Blind Association was formed by Dr. Thomas Armitage, initially to promote the use of Braille. It was to become the Royal National Institute for the Blind. Outside the asylum, many disabled people simply lived their lives purposefully in their communities. In 1894, the first branch of the Guild of the Brave Poor Things, motto, Happy in My Lot, was formed as a self-help group for people with physical disabilities. They described themselves as a group to make life sweet for the blind and crippled folk of all ages. Conveying a sense of pride and solidarity, they used popular military imagery of the period to create positive feelings about their disabilities, referring to themselves as a great army of suffering ones. Their annual report in 1902 described how they go out daily into a battlefield, where pain is the enemy to be met and overcome. Outside the walls of the 19th century asylum, the daily battles for survival, fame or simple respect, were fought in the towns and cities of England.